AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Matt and Hunter here today. Hey, Hunter.
Hello.
We do want to remind people, we want you to stick around with us throughout the afternoon here. Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, the Capital Steps guys coming back to town this week, and we, of course, got some tickets to give away. Woo. And so listen in the 4 o'clock hour for your chance to win tickets to go see the Capital Steps. Ooh la la. Is Brett doing the show today?
Yes.
All right, so there you go. Brett and Hunter are going to be doing that show. How have you been? Everything going okay?
Pretty good. Pretty good this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
My mom had a garage sale, and okay. I helped out with that all weekend. Exhausting, but...
Oh, yeah.
But fun.
Well, you kind of learned very quickly that those things are, this is a lot more work than I wanted it to be.
Yeah, see, my mom was doing it not even, like, worried about making money, to just, like, have fun for the weekend, meet people, and she succeeded at that.
Well, and you know, you kind of have this idea that you're going to make some money, and mm-hmm. you basically, I mean, you don't even get close to minimum wage. I mean, we actually had some good stuff when we were, we kind of got rid of a lot of the kids stuff, you know, mm-hmm. about 10 years ago, we got rid of the little kids stuff. And the one thing I'll never forget about doing the garage sale was the woman who was like negotiating with me for books. And she goes, I'll take, you know, we had them for like 5 cents each. And she goes, I'll take 3 for 10 cents. And so no, they're 5 cents each. Just, you know, that's like, well, you lost the sale. The other thing that I always remembered was we were setting up the garage sale, and at 6, you know, like we were like 6:15, we're setting up tables and stuff like that in the morning. And all of a sudden, I mean, about 20 people came sprinting up the driveway, looking around frantically, and then sprinted back out. And I'm like, what in the world? And it's you know, these people that are trying to find these, you know, these real finds that, oh, look at, like, oh, wait, he's got some nice furniture. I can buy that for him dirt cheap and get that. So I, you know, I was just kind of like, this is what you do. You mean you had to be up at like 4 a.m. and then scouring neighborhoods, running and literally running. The guy was pouring sweat. I remember that. So I don't know if I'll ever do that again. You know, there's a lot of charitable groups we donate a lot of the stuff to. You know, and especially nowadays, like my son had played baseball, so he's got a lot of stuff that was geared towards when he was much younger.
Yeah.
We found a baseball charity that basically gets that stuff to those kids. And so it's directly point to point, you know, there you go. Some kid's going to get it as opposed to, you know, maybe, you know, whether or not just it gets even put out on the floor or something like that of a larger place. So that's what we do, kind of our main goal there. Today... a rite of annual passage, the picking up of all the back-to-school supplies for the kids.
Oh, wow, that's a big day.
Yeah. in a lot of different ways. It's first of all, I will say it's nice going in there with a high school senior and two junior hires because they can kind of go get their own things.
Yeah.
It still took about an hour.
Yeah.
And you know, you go and do this. It is ungodly expensive. I mean, it is truly ungodly expensive. And I get it that, you know, you're trying to offset costs, but, you know, it doesn't help everything when you go in there and it's a, you know, you've got, you know, you got to go buy rooms of paper. You got to go buy wipes for the classroom. You got to go buy snacks for the classroom. You got to go buy tissues for the classroom. Now, I didn't have to do that because now all my kids are in junior high, but we still had to do the tissues and the reams of paper. And it is amazing to me. I think one of the biggest problems we have as a society is we just do not understand the cost of things. When I say we, I'm talking about white America. Because white America, okay, fine, you want to accuse me of painting with a broad brush, I get that. I can understand that, and you're right. There are a lot of people that do understand this. But I think when you get into the suburbs where I am at, there are just so many people that will look at you and say, well, it costs $400 to play part of the sports team. And you're like looking at them, it's like, do you understand you just priced out 75% of the people that live in this town just by chart? And I'm not saying I'm not saying you're making a profit. I'm not saying you're pocketing the money, but you have to acknowledge the fact that if you charge $400 to be part of a sports team, you've just negated at least 75% of your local community from playing in that league. You just did. That doesn't include the equipment and stuff like that. you know, you do these back to school things, and you know, it's like, oh well, you have to buy you know, all these things, and you know, it's $100-$150, and there's a lot of people who that is more money than they have for their entire family, for vacations, for the holidays, for everything for the year. And I just sometimes think that we have to kind of start acknowledging that we can't have a society that's based on the wealthiest people and their dynamic and their viewpoint, because it completely, totally botches the view for everyone else. I mean, and like, well, what do you mean you can't afford the $40? A lot of people can't afford $40. I got a lot of stories to get to today. The most disturbing thing I want to bring up, though, about back to school shopping. My daughter needed a backpack. In the backpack section, they were selling for $170, $200, bulletproof backpacks. Bulletproof backpacks. This is where we are as a society. This is where we're at as a society. Bulletproof backpacks. And I just, how are you as a child today when you're thinking about going to school, you have to think about body armor that you're putting on to see if you can survive the day. Because we do not dare do anything to fight against this epidemic of gun violence in this country. And it's just so hard, because you know, it's easy to walk past that and just sort of say, you know, oh, that, what's the big deal? Someone wrote on one of the Facebook pages, they made a post on here, a comment in there. And this was in regards to talking about one of the shootings yesterday and the story I posted. In retrospect, Sandy Hook marked the end of the U.S. gun control debate, said Dan Hodges, a British journalist, wrote in a post on Twitter 2 years ago, referring to the 2012 attack that killed 20 young students at an elementary school in Connecticut. Once America decided killing children was bearable, it was over. And that is the absolute 100% truth. And I want to remind everybody what the NRA did at that point, when all of a sudden, because I was going to the bus stop to get my kids that day. And I remember the news was starting to trickle in that there was a shooting at an elementary school. And by the time they announced, oh, yes, this is truly, you know, one of the worst things that has ever happened in this country, I was just shaking in fear about my child, getting him off the bus, getting my daughters off the bus, getting them home and hugging them and not letting go. And I remember that. In the days after, the right took a stance. First of all, some of them didn't even talk at all. The vulnerable ones, vulnerable Republicans, they did their thoughts and prayers, and they said the tragedy is there and we'll look into it, and said nothing else. A lot of people, traditional Republicans, screamed about how it's politics. Don't talk about this while the dead are not buried. And notice they never wanted to circle back and talk about it. It was about shutting you up, about getting to the next news cycle, getting to the next story. It was never about respecting the dead. It was about shutting you up. You had some people saying that were belligerent, and you know, as dictated by Sean Hannity the other night, when he's saying, well, what we need now is a police state. We really, you know, they're talking about gun turrets at schools and bulletproof glass on every window and security doors around and, you know, 17 security guards per shift at each school. And I'm like, who's going to pay for all this? And you see, that was also a smokescreen. They had no intention of paying for it. But they just wanted to put out, oh, our solution is to basically turn every school into a military base in this country, and you guys got to figure out how to do that because we're not going to pay for it. But as well, we want to remind you that there were a lot of elements of the right who pushed the false flag argument. The people that Sandy Hook was a false flag, that Sandy Hook was this made-up tragedy, that that kid's still alive. And they went for years. And granted, what it was doing was there were people who were banking on guns as the greatest thing ever, and now the gun had been used to slaughter children. Slaughter young children. I can't even comprehend the terror, the insanity of those classrooms on that morning. I can't even comprehend it. And for most people who have worshipped guns, they had to feel the same way. It's like, oh my God, what are we doing? And so the false flag argument became in there because it prevented these people from having to say, Jesus Christ, I'm the problem. I'm the horrible person. I'm the one that's pushing these guns. And instead it was like, well, that didn't happen, to a point where people have gone to jail because they have harassed the family members of the children who were slaughtered that day. That because they're so insistent that it has to be true, because if it's not true, then guns are truly horrible. That is, I'll never forget that. I'll never forget. That was their response. And it worked. And there are a lot of Christians out there right now who, oh God, it was tragic, but we're not going to do anything to stop the next one. And we talked about it on the radio here back then. I talked about it here where I said, what does it take? Would it take the gunning down of like a Special Olympics camp in town where, you know, 200 kids were gunned down by a group of psychopaths, for people to realize, wow, maybe the guns are not the best thing in the world? I don't know. Today, I've had more, my share of gun kook has come out of the woodwork, and they're defending the guns. And I was like, you know, it's video games, man. It's bad parenting. And I always say, you know, Hunter, when I was in the military and they're getting ready to dispatch us to the front lines, when they gave us those video games and those parenting guides, I sure felt like I was ready to go into combat. Wait a minute. No, they didn't. They didn't give us. When we were in the military, I didn't go to the front lines with a video game and a parenting book. I went with the gun. And you know why you go with the gun in the military? Because you have to possibly kill the guy on the other side of the line. That's called war. That's how it is. I know, I'm not condoning it, but it is what the military does. And the reality is, that's kind of the element that you want to just skip past. Guns are designed to kill other human beings. Sure, a hunting weapon designed for hunting animals, that's there. But pretty much every other gun is designed to kill human beings. And we have a crazy train of Republicans, and Christian Republicans too, just god-awful human beings, who are out there saying, and they should have as many guns as possible because Jesus would have loved that. I don't know what to do with these people. But here we are in this day and age. My kids are shopping for back-to-school stuff, and one of the options you can have is get a bulletproof backpack for your kid. Now, I'm going to point out the obvious in the same way that we talked about when they came out with the bulletproof whiteboard, which apparently they expected little Billy to wield like Captain America and deflect all the bullets. A backpack covers your back, and it doesn't really cover that much else. Just a sad day. It's just a sad day. And once again, we all know the truth. No Republican is going to do a damn thing to stop this. Not one Republican is going to do a damn thing to stop this. They're not going to put into common sense background checks. They're not going to shut down the loopholes for online sales or flea market sales or garage sale sales. They're not going to shut down these things. They're not going to say, well, maybe we should have an assault weapons ban again, because reminder, before the assault weapons ban was allowed to expire, we didn't have these slaughters at this rate. Maybe we should make sure there's mental health screening for anyone that wants to own a gun, especially people that want to own their fourth or fifth gun, especially guns that are not designed for hunting, because that might be a big red flag right there. Maybe we should have mandatory gun safety training. Mandatory. Not some mail-in postcard, But you have to go through 40 hours of sitting down in a classroom and learning how all the, what a gun can do, the dangers of it, the manual, how it works, so you understand it. God forbid we do any of that stuff. Would still, none of which would infringe on your first, your Second Amendment rights. Absolutely wouldn't. But yet the Republicans, who basically they've become so broken, they've become so blinded by all this that they would rather suggest taxing every American at $10,000 per person in this country to try to put up military base like schools, as opposed to pass a simple common sense gun regulation bill. That is the craziness that we live in. Let's go to Randy in St. Cloud really quick before we go to the break here. He's been holding. Welcome on in, Randy.
Well, thanks. Well, you know, if you taught your children properly, when the guns start shooting, you teach them to run so their backpack will protect them because they're running away. But, no, what I wanted to say was when, and I brought this up before on other call-in shows and been told, that's rude. That's very impolite. That's just not fair. If you bring up people taking money and voting the way the people who give them money ask them to vote, that's called bribery in my world. I don't know what it's called in this world. And that we have 97% of the people in this country, even gun owners and people in the NRA, who agree with the idea of background checks, and we can't get it done, the only answer is bribery. Mm-hmm. I don't want to call it giving campaign donation. It's bribery.
Well, and Randy, it's and here's what I'll say is that right now it is bribery. It's the NRA is bribing these politicians. I mean, I did the math today. I mean, let me pull this up really quick here, because this is actually, this should just terrify you at how cheap these Republicans consider, to, you know, human life. Mitch McConnell gets $1.26 million in NRA cash to ensure gun regulations do not get passed. If you were to factor that 126, divide that by the amount of people that have been killed, this was as of 8-6 this morning, 246 dead, that's $5,129 per human life. That is what Mitch McConnell has said. And it's only going to get less. It's probably going to get down to about $2,000, maybe $3,000 per human life. And that's Mitch McConnell is saying, if you give me $3,000 per human life, I will basically back your plan. And that's the insanity of all this, is that it's not like these people are turning their back for billions and billions. No, you know, each one of those lives, every one of those people that died in Dayton, Ohio, all those people that died in El Paso, all those people that died at the Garlic Festival in California, those people, their lives were $5,121. And if you give Mitch McConnell $5,121, he will basically turn a blind eye to that death. That is the Republican Party today. And he'll scream he's Christian, by the way. He'll scream he's Christian. Nothing's going to change, because the Republic, until we vote all these Republicans out, and then even then, they're going to be screaming about, won't anybody care about the guns? I care about the human beings, and I could give a rat's ass about your guns. And the more and more we go down this path, the more I am of like, we need to repeal the Second Amendment. And we can do that. We've repealed amendments in the past. But the longer this goes on, I think the eventual end game has to be, you have to clean house and basically just say, you know what, we need to start all over again. And this chaos in the streets just can't be our standard. It just can't be. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Next time on Philosophy Talk, the Doomsday Doctrine.
Today's nuclear weapons are magnitudes more powerful than the first atomic bombs.
A war involving them would wipe out all life on Earth.
So how do we justify keeping so many nuclear weapons?
Or threatening to use them?
Our guest is renowned whistleblower and one-time nuclear war planner Daniel Ellsberg.
The Doomsday Doctrine, next time on Philosophy Talk.
Philosophy Talk, every Sunday at 8 a.m. and again at 2 p.m. on AM 950. We'll be right back.
I'm Rick Unger. You've heard the screamers, you've heard the shouters, the haters, the berators. Well, now it's time to listen to a real conversation, a rational conversation. Now it's time for the Rick Unger Show.
Listen to the Rick Unger Show every weekday from 5 to 7 p.m. on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Stream at am950radio.com or search KTNF on the TuneIn app.
Hi, friends. I've been talking to you about Minnesota's first green cemetery, Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. It's an entirely new way of looking at our last earthly step. Burials are designed to have as little impact on the environment as possible, for many of us a continuation of the commitment we made during our lifetimes. Let me suggest you go to the website mngreengraves.com. Explore what it is. Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. It's a lovely place, a peaceful place. Minnesota's first green cemetery.
We at Total Dog Company are hands-on dog lovers. We are involved in the care of all aspects of our dogs. The same kind of hands-on care is found in Canada brand pet foods. From growing increasing amounts of the ingredients in their foods to cooking their recipes in their own cookery, Canada is a small, independent company that focuses on the hands-on attention to quality, same as Total Dog Company. Find Total Dog in New Hope right off of 169 at 9432 36th Avenue North and at TotalDogCompany.com.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Thanks to Todd Collett, who's sponsoring AM 950 this week. You can sponsor us too. 952-946-8885. 952-946-8885 is the phone number. Find out how you can sponsor AM 950. Todd's band Just Folk have some three songs out there. Coma Tonight is one of them. I'll make sure I get that posted tonight. Three songs to help inspire the resistance. We'll get those all eventually posted up on social media, so check that out. And thanks once again, Todd. For more information, once again, 952-946-8885 is the phone number. And a reminder as well, once again, Capital Steps tickets coming up here in the 4 o'clock hour. Got them today. I do believe we have another pair tomorrow. And so we have a pair today and a pair tomorrow on the Capital Steps tickets in the 4 o'clock hour.
Yes, I believe so.
All right. So make sure you're listening for your chance to win on that. Hunter, you ever see the movie Footloose?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a good film. It's a very enjoyable film. Laurie Singer, by the way, I think is a very underappreciated part of that movie. I went and rewatched it that not long ago, and, you know, she's actually, she's actually a very good, she's very good in that movie. I mean, Diane Wiest is great. We forget who's all in there. John Lithgow's in there. Diane Wiest is in there. Kevin Bacon, of course.
It's a classic.
It is. It is absolutely classic. Do you – I'll tell you what. I'll preface that there. I'll leave that there for a second. Let me go into this little story here before we go into the bottom of the hour break. Religious activist accused of burning four LGBTQ children's books that he checked out of the library in Iowa has been convicted of criminal mischief and fined. Sioux County Attorney Thomas Kunzel said the 63-year-old – Paul Robert Doerr of Sumtown was found guilty of the misdemeanor Tuesday, ordered to pay $125 fines and court costs. Doerr posted the video on Facebook in October, which he denounced the Orange City Library for having the books and threw them into a burning barrel. That's good. That's all we've needed right now from the far right in this country, hasn't it? Burning books. There we go. Dora had the charge dismissed, saying he was singled out for prosecution because of his anti-gay message. No, you were singled out for prosecution because you took some library books and burned them and then posted a video of you doing it, idiot, online. How did they catch me? The judge rejected his argument in July, saying the only message being sent to him was that he can't burn books that he did not belong to him. Well, guess, heaven forbid. Do you remember that movie? As I read that story, I kept thinking about in that movie, in Footloose, there is that sensational scene where the priest comes on in and and he basically he's this conservative priest, John Lithgow. He plays this conservative priest. He's Laurie Singer's dad, and he kind of puts forward this notion that he's this really far right Christian dude. And some of his parish gets a little out of control, and they go into the school, I believe it is. They go into the school and pull books out of the school library and start trying to burn them, to which he furiously tells them, "What are you doing? Go home. Just go home." Burning books, because back then there was the line that, you know, you could still be a far-right Christian, but you didn't do things which epitomized Nazis. And that was the point, was that, you know, you can't allow, you can be a person, you can be your own person, but you can't allow yourself to just fall subject to the mob mentality and become this horrible, horrible thing. And Lithgow, and by the way, and Lithgow was just brilliant in that movie, the entire movie, he's quite good. And, it kind of just shows you how far back, how far we are. Now we're to the point with Republicans, does a book burning really surprise anyone?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Not at all. I mean, this is, it's almost, I'm surprised there aren't more of them. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised there aren't more of these going on, because that is who the Republican Party is today. A party that if you don't agree with who they are, then you need to be shut down one way or the other. And that's the sadness of all this. And how we get back from this point, I don't know. But a bunch of idiots voted for Trump. So 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. When we do return, I want to get two stories. One, it's housing in Minneapolis, St. Paul, apparently is just insane to find. We'll get into that. Also, the destruction of the agricultural sector. We'll talk about that as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak.
And I'm Adam Ostrowski.
We are here at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces to talk about the joy of live fire cooking. Cooking over a live fire is the oldest and most basic form of cooking.
What's new is in the way a fire is handled and its heat is managed.
It's easier to experience and enjoy the smell and taste of food cooked over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces sells and installs live fire grills, fire pits, and ovens. Let us help you experience the smell, the taste, the fun of cooking with fire.
Pizza was first made and is still best made in an open fire oven. The radiant and conductive heat of a live fire is unmatched for wood roasting and baking artisan breads too.
Come see the many ways you can cook over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces has over 35 working wood and gas units on display at the corner of East Franklin and Riverside Avenue in Minneapolis. More information at woodlandstoves.com. Find the fire that works for you. Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
Hi, this is Evelyn. Dad, don't make me do what you made Charlie do.
You want to drive, right?
Fine. My dad is cooler than all YouTube and Instagram celebrities combined. Matt McNeil.
That's lit.
Whatever. I'm getting ready to start my behind-the-wheel driver's training, and my dad says the only vehicles he wants me learning in are Toyotas. Fine with me, because I love them, too.
The vehicles I trust for my young children are the vehicles I trust for their own driving adventure. It's safety and security you can't beat. Test drive a fantastic Toyota today at Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 west of the downtown in Golden Valley.
Being in the Army National Guard is about more than just serving your country. It's about being there for your community when your neighbors need you most. The Army National Guard makes college affordable. Serving part-time lets you attend school full-time while you take advantage of education benefits that can help you graduate debt-free. If a civilian career is your goal, serving part-time allows you to work at a full-time job. The skills, qualities, and contacts you'll develop in the Guard can open doors to a great civilian career. Want to serve but worried about being away from friends and family? Part-time service in the Army National Guard allows you to serve close to home. Serving in the Army National Guard lets you have the life you want while you enjoy the many benefits of serving your community and nation. You owe it to yourself to learn more about how the Army National Guard can fit into your life. Visit NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard, aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
And by the way, try the stuffed grape leaves. Love them. The Coda Lemonade, the lemon chicken they got. That is some tasty stuff, man. They got great stuff. And vegetarians, they got tons of vegetarian options as well. It's fantastic Greek food, and they just do it right. As a person who has been to Greece, it is top notch. It really is. So stop on by. It's Greek to me, the eatlocalminnesota.com restaurant of the week over in Lindale and Lake in Minneapolis, St. Paul, 952-946-6205. Minneapolis-St. Paul are different in many ways, but right now, at least, they have one thing in common. If you and your family make $30,000 or less, you can't afford to rent in either of them. Wow. Every month, researchers at HousingLink, an affordable housing listing service in Minneapolis, put together reports on what is actually available in the Twin Cities market and to whom in June, if you happen to be in that $30,000 or less bracket and have a family of four, it was nothing. Nothing. And as a matter of fact, I think, wasn't St. Paul at 28,000? That if you had less, you know, 28,000, you couldn't. So it basically is 30,000. It gets Minneapolis in there. You have to have at least 30,000 to find anything in Minneapolis. Now, I want to start off by pointing this out to the stick up their backside Republicans who like to think to themselves, like, you can't raise your minimum wage in that big cities. Well, what are you doing to deal with the housing crisis in Minneapolis, St. Paul? Oh, that's right. Nothing. At least by us making a $15 minimum wage in Minneapolis, St. Paul, we at least give people a fighting chance. And time for Matt's Math Corner. Oh, love Matt's Math Corner. Once again, let's do this. 15 times 40 times 52. And once again, that doesn't give you any time off per year, really. $31,200 before taxes. So $15 an hour barely gets you into Minneapolis, St. Paul. $15 an hour, barely. And you're working 40 hours a week, 52 weeks a year. You're not getting any breaks. So don't look at me, you cowards that don't want to, you know, I get it. You don't care about Minneapolis, St. Paul, because that's it's a bunch of people who are Democrats and they're poor and they're minorities and you're Republicans. And those are three things you can't stand. I get it. But the reality is then at least don't get in Minneapolis, St. Paul's way when they try to solve this problem without you. Don't then try to, you can't do that. Please. It's not to say that there aren't any affordable apartments that don't exist in either city, says marketing and outreach director Josh Dye. They do. They're just taken, inaccessible because of waiting lists and max out occupancy. He can't invest. He's not particularly surprised. There's been a tremendous gap in housing availability for a very, very long time, he says, but this has been the longest stretch of low vacancy for a while, and both cities are starting to take notice. Addressing the affordable housing crisis has become a top priority in the Twin Cities as well as in the surrounding metro. But in the meantime, it's bad news for Twin Cities residents. Census data shows that in both cities, a little over 20% of the people live in poverty, which, and as the Pioneer Press pointed out, in the minimum wage in St. Paul is currently at $9.86 an hour, or about $20,000 a year, which is close to half of what it takes to rent a two-bedroom in the city. Even Minneapolis, which is a minimum wage of about $11 an hour, doesn't get you much closer. According to HousingLink's report, 47% of Minneapolis renters live in housing they technically can't afford. The same is true of nearly 50% of St. Paul renters. The housing crisis is hitting low-income residents the hardest. And by the way, can we take this back to the first thing I said about back-to-school shopping? We have to stop filtering things through white suburban vision. We have to. And we have to start looking at this and saying, we got a big problem. And because, it's just the fact that wages haven't kept up with inflation, and the fact that basically that the Republicans are trying their hardest to make sure that the minorities and the poor don't ever get out of debt and don't ever get into a better path. It's just disgusting. And this is a big problem. I actually also want to tie this into one other thing, what we've talked about, and that is this fight in Minneapolis is starting to occur because of these apartment buildings that are getting built that have, the property managers are buying up a bunch of the units and using them as sort of B&B type of rentals, which is coming under a lot of criticism because that's not what they were told they were going to be used for when they got the building permits for them. That wasn't going to be a glorified hotel. It was supposed to be residential property. And so let me ask this question. How many of these buildings... Because if you understand anything about how cities do this, what they'll do is they'll say, a certain amount of the units within any building built have to be for lower income families or renters. Okay, depending on the city, usually it's a certain percentage, you know, can be up to 30%, 40%, but sometimes can only be 15, 20%. But needless to say that there's always some units within any building that gets built which are geared for lower income renters. If all the lower income renter units are being gobbled up by these property management groups that are trying to turn them into glorified, Airbnbs, then is that contributing to the problem? Because it would seem to me that if it doesn't do us any good to demand that a property or a construction company that's going to build an apartment complex is building lower income housing, if the lower income housing never has a chance to hit the market, that it's all bought up before the building is even opened, and then it's used as, you know, $1,000 a night for an NFC playoff game rental. That's where I think this is going. So, it's just a small part of it, but I thought about this when I talked about the availability of these places. How much of these places are getting gobbled up by these Airbnb property management groups? And I think maybe we need to start looking at, in Minneapolis and St. Paul, looking at the housing rules and saying that only and maybe what you do is an apartment complex is you just say no more than two rental units per building can be used for, you know, a rental a rental property, and just kind of crack down on it. You don't approve these buildings to get built because it's a hotel. You build them for apartments. And it doesn't surprise me people have figured out ways around this stuff, but then how many of those, affordable housing units are being gobbled up by these Airbnb property management groups? That's an interesting question I think we have to fold into this. Let's go to Phil in Golden Valley. Phil, thanks for holding. Welcome on in.
Hi, Matt.
Hey.
Well, I think that we should try to get our legislators and our lawmakers to agree to try to insert an amendment into any minimum wage law that says it must be kept up with inflation. Because if they would have had this regulation in the minimum wage that was set back, who knows, before the dawn of recorded time, it wouldn't be 7 1/4 an hour now because it hasn't been raised in, 15 years or something? It would be $20 an hour.
And
it would have been indexed to keep up with inflation.
Well, and one of the things that's really interesting about what you bring up there, Phil, is that the Republicans do point out and kind of push on that in regards to they try to make it seem as if minimum wage was never supposed to be about giving people a comfortable lifestyle, which it was. It was supposed to say you can't basically work people at bare bottom prices. And it was designed to give people a better quality of life. Their argument now is that it's supposed to hurt so that you try to make yourself better by getting a different job. The problem is that to afford life at a minimum wage, before you can take those steps up the old corporate ladder, generally you have to have money, and you don't have enough money if you're having to work 3 full-time jobs each week just to afford the basics. So, Phil, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. No, he's exactly right. And that was designed by the Republicans. Don't tie it to inflation as it should have been because why? It allows you to depress the amount of money that these people are making while making it, and not give them a quality of life increase. And basically, you create more debt. You create more people that have nothing more than being the working class of America. Nope, we got a lot of problems, and pretty much every single stinking one of them has got Republican written all over it, doesn't it? Seriously. Mm-hmm. Seriously. Why is every problem? You need to pray to Jesus. That's your answer? How about you're a politician. Why don't you just go and pass a better minimum wage? Jesus wouldn't want those people having fishes or loaves. No, not at all. He was totally against that kind of thing, wasn't he? Yes. And don't get him started on the wine. Competition is fierce to get your hands on any kind of housing at all, which only makes it tougher when lower your income gets. Die can't say whether we'll hit some kind of equilibrium sometime soon. All these reports are designed to do is give a snapshot of what each city is going through at the moment so consumers can make good housing decisions and legislators can make smart policies going forward. You've got to be careful. Minneapolis is on the verge of jumping to that next level of city. We have got this light rail line that's being built. As a matter of fact, I was on the Hiawatha line, driving on Hiawatha today past the Hiawatha line, and I was telling the kids as we were driving, trying to point out all the new buildings that have been built down there since the Hiawatha line was there. And many of them, and these are vibrant, fun neighborhoods, but it has changed so dramatically. And, you know, even when I was a kid, even when I was going to college, after I got out of the military and I was in town here, you could still work, you know, I had the GI Bill to a point. But, I mean, at the same time, you could still work 30, 32 hours a week and still afford a rent. And nowadays, you can't even do that. That was 1993, 94. And here you are today, and people are working themselves to the bone, and they cannot get ahead. This is a big problem, and I understand that the new housing, you know, policies that they're putting into place in Minneapolis about duplexes and triplexes and stuff like that. Part of that is designed to try to give better options to some of these people. But the reality is until you can figure out some way to, and once again, you are still way behind in Minneapolis, St. Paul on what the minimum wage should be. I mean, if you're in New York City, you are working, you know, the people that are working in these jobs, they live way out of town. You know, hour and a half out of the city, because that's the only place they can find that they can afford anything. Or they're living with 19 people in something the size of a hallway closet. Or they're homeless. And this is where we're starting to get into a real ugliness in America. The amount of people, the working homeless, the amount of people who are out there every single day working 8 hours a week, maybe working two jobs, working 16 hours and 8 hours a week, 8 hours a day or 16 hours a day, you know, working really hard, and they still cannot afford to get ahead. They can't afford an apartment. They can't find a place to live. So they're living in a car. That doesn't do us as a society any good.
And there's another point that people don't always consider is nowadays a lot of people are living with their parents, so multi-generational houses. Mm-hmm. And then the problem that causes is then you no longer qualify for any sort of welfare benefits or food stamps because it goes household income. So you've got a bunch of people working, living, earning under the poverty level, but then don't qualify for food stamps because they live in the same house because they can't afford their own.
And when we talk about trying to get out of this circle, I mean, we're talking about it with my oldest son who's getting ready to have a senior year of college, or high school, rather, senior year of high school before he heads off to college. And we're kind of like looking and saying, okay, how much is he going to have to pay for this college on his own? So he's going to be walking on out, and you know, I want my kids to be happy. That is the most important thing for me, is my kids to be happy. But I also want my kids to have some job that has some potential for them to be able to pay off their college loans and get a decent job. Not because, I mean, hey, we all go through problems. My kid needs to move back home for a little bit. Sure, knock yourself out. But it's once you get in there to get back out in the real world, it becomes harder and harder. We are changing. Our society is changing fundamentally for the worse, primarily because of conservative policies which deny the needy help, deny income equality, deny quality housing, and this fend for yourself, you know, chucking a ham into the prison yard mentality is what these people think makes America great, and it doesn't. I made this point. The United States isn't a business. The United States is a union. We're supposed to be working together for the greater good, not I'm in it for myself. And that, you see, is once again the problem we have is there are way too many people in this country where all they care about is themselves. And they will say screw you to everyone else as long as they got their 14th and 15th jet ski. I mean, my God, we talked about it how many times with the pharma industry and diabetics and insulin prices. The industry there, they're basically screwing over the poor. We have Republican policies which have been hurting us all. And my God, we're finally getting to the breaking point. And if we can't go on out there and tell these people who have been blindly voting Republican, they're the ones who are doing it to you. If we can't convince them of that, well, I fear that the end result is going to be even more violence and more frustration and more shootings and more digression in this country. It really is. We've got a problem in Minneapolis, St. Paul. You should not have to have... You should not have to live outside of Minneapolis, St. Paul if you make $30,000 a year. You shouldn't have to, especially considering how many people we need in the metro area, in the Twin Cities themselves, to be working there, making $30,000 a year. There should be some way we can address this. And I think, once again, if I can, with these property management groups, if they're gobbling up all the lower income properties within these buildings, which are supposed to be set aside for lower income individuals, well, that needs to be addressed immediately as well. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break and come on back. 952-946-6205. I want to come back some ag stuff too. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Eat fresh and support local farmers this summer by shopping at the Minneapolis Farmers Market. The market has the best selection of fresh and local fruits and vegetables, meats, and farmstead goods. Fresh at the market now, cherry tomatoes, cauliflower, broccoli, cucumbers, zucchini, beets, carrots, and even some new baby potatoes. The Minneapolis Farmers Market is open every day, 6 a.m. to 1 p.m. Plus, there's additional locations Tuesday at the Hennepin County Government Center and Thursdays at Nicollet Mall. More details at mplsfarmersmarket.com.
Chances are, after spring cleaning, you missed a spot. A couple really big spots, like your roof and siding. Run your fingers across your siding. You'll likely get a gross residue. And your roof probably has some black streaks, too. Your roof and siding aren't always easy to clean, but they're definitely the most visible parts of your home that give it its curb appeal. So let Blue Sky Services clean your roof and siding. Blue Sky's safe soft wash method won't cause any damages and will make your home look like new. Right now, Blue Sky Services is running their summer special where you can get your whole house, roof, and siding cleaned starting at only $447. That's the most viewed parts of your home cleaned for only $447. Then mention AM950 when you call Blue Sky Services to get an additional $50 off. So get the curb appeal back on your home and call Blue Sky Services at 952-467-2447. That's 952-467-2447.
This is Ellie Krug from Ellie 2.0 Radio on Mondays from 7 to 8 a.m. Many listeners know that I founded Human Inspiration Works, LLC, which trains on human inclusivity and on how to be welcoming to diverse humans. Today, organizations of all sizes find that they need to train team members on diversity and inclusion. I can do that. Many say that my trainings change the way they see the world. I'd love to help make your organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell.
Freddie, this generation of the baby boomers, people are living longer, so the baby boomers are taking care of elderly parents.
Let's talk about your health, and specifically, let's talk about Medicare. Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment.
Catch New Beginnings with Freddie Bell, Saturdays at 11 on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'll get to the full phone lines in just a moment. I did want to mention, if I may, the ag story here today. If you want to know how, first of all, the stock market is clearly broken. It really is, because you should not have your fourth largest ag importer in China cancel all ag contracts, and there shouldn't be a massive fall off. That just tells you that the stock market is a false number at this point, because none of that makes any sense. There should be some consequences. One of the reasons why the Great Depression was a Great Depression and not just a really bad recession was the failure of the ag markets as well. And so you can't have our fourth largest importer of American ag products cut all contracts and expect to have some, you know, raise up 300 points. No, my guess is a lot of that money was coming from Russia. The other element, too, which is I think is the reason why the economic sector in this country is not screaming terrified right now, is I think the decision has already been made that the people who will suffer for this stupid trade war are the smaller farmers, that the large corporate farms will weather the storm, and that the smaller farmers will be the ones who get forced out and get killed off in this process. That is why I think that the economists that are not screaming, well, some actually are, but many economists are like, oh, this is no big problem. No, the only reason you're saying that is because you've already sacrificed all the small farmers in this country just so that you can basically, try to latch onto the big corporate entities. So I think that's really scary. From September 2017 to May 2018, soybean exports from China totaled 27.7 million tons. The number dropped to 7 million tons, down 20 million tons in the same nine-month period in 2018, 2019. And now we've lost the entire market completely. Wow, our ag sector is screwed. Mike is in Columbia Heights. Let's run the lines here. Welcome on in, Mike.
Hi, Matt. Hey, Republicans are conservatives, and conservatism is a static ideology. Even the name conservatism means to resist change, you know? And at the bottom of all of our social problems, there's a Republican making money. You know, I don't care if it's housing, I don't care what it is, there's a Republican got his fingers in there making money. And as long as Democratic candidates run against individuals, in other words, run against members of the Republican Party, you know, they have to run against the Republican ideology.
Well, and Mike, I'm going to step on in there, and you're exactly right. I mean, the reason why the wealthiest people fought against any changes in the 1880s, 1890s, because, well, they liked the system. They liked being wealthy as opposed to everyone being poor, and they didn't want to change. And now we're getting back to that. No, this is about basically creating a permanent wealth class and a permanent poor class, and that's it. Jim is in Minneapolis, line 3. Jim, welcome on in.
Hey there, Matt. Listen, on this housing issue, why not approach it from two standpoints? One, raise the minimum wage, and two, institute rent control.
I'm not against the rent control, and thanks, Jim. I appreciate the phone call. I'm not against that because you've got to do something. When $30,000 a year, basically $15 an hour full time, that's not enough to get you a place to live in Minneapolis or St. Paul. That's a real dangerous thing. Dan is in Rochester. Dan, you get the final word. Welcome on in.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Mike. Hey, I was thought, like, you remember old Jim Baker and Tabby Baker?
Yes.
Yes, I saw on the show there, and here the other day he had the four horsemen, the four girls, you know, congressmen, and yeah, they were pitching about them. And they were like in the world, and they started doing like Alex Jones selling survival kits.
Well, they and Dan, thank you very much. No, that is what these people are based on fear. When you go to advertising school, one of the first things they tell you is one of the best ways to sell a product is fear. And if you look at most advertisement, fear plays a role in it somewhere. That is the Republican brand. You should be scared. Henceforth, you should do what we tell you to. But, you know, maybe the ag for the farmers, and at least in the case with them losing their entire markets and their farms might finally wake them up that the Republicans weren't doing them any favors. We're back tomorrow. Until then, see ya.